In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Why, yes. Let's talk movies and more like we do on Mondays. As Alan Adams joins us here in studio. Good afternoon, sir.
And good afternoon to you.
How are things going on your Monday?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. It was, nice to have it look like, it feel like summer out there.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't really been doing that for a little while.
Well, so that was a good thing.
So that was good. My understanding is I shouldn't get used to it.
Not this week,
at least not for the immediate future. But yeah. But that's okay. It's, nice to be out there in the sunshine. Even if I do have to wear long pants to work like a chump.
Boy.
What's
up with that?
I know, right?
Even in the summertime when there are no students?
Right, you would think, but nope. It's like, oh, we have to maintain a level of professionalism. Boo.
They know who they're talking about here?
Right. Like, I thought I made this clear when I was being hired, but no.
I say what you do. You put on the shorts and you walk in holding your Downtown Hall of Fame mug. And if anybody questions your attire, you point at your name on the mug.
I'm hearing a lot of questions that are answered by my mug.
Yes. You see that? Alan Adams. Who's the next name? Ken Burns. Boom. There you go. Yeah. Thank you very much.
it was a nice day. It was nice to sort of get back into the swing of things after what proved to be a pretty long weekend. So
yeah, improv show Friday night. I heard that went well.
Yeah, it was great. I think we kind of got stung just a little bit by the fact that it was the first like pleasant evening in what seemed like forever in terms of attendance. But it was a decent crowd, one of the sort of unknown benefits that come with having a slightly smaller than usual house is there's a lot more freedom to get weird, and we went ahead and did that in a number of different ways. But yeah, it was super fun. Like we had a lovely time. The folks at the Bangor Arts Exchange, Josh Gass, Launchpad, always wonderful hosts, and got out there, did our thing. It was a hoot.
And speaking of the focus group, another performance coming up this weekend.
Right? Yeah, on Saturday, the group is taking part as part of Orono's Artsapalooza celebration. First time they're back in full swing for a couple of years.
Nice.
The focus group set is scheduled for 8 to 8:40 at the Takarita on Mill Street, right there in downtown Orono. So that's going to be, fun. It's, it's a different kind of space. It'll be a different kind of crowd, but, it's free. So, if you haven't seen us and you want to get a sense of what we're all about, come on by. And, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Very nice. And you were telling me the story in the break that it was a tough weekend. I don't want to tease anybody here. You said goodbye to a couple of your kitty cats, but they're fine. They got adopted.
Yeah, we've been fostering four cats since mid January. We took them on initially because they were all potentially very ill, and so we engaged with these with this rescue in terms of what they call FOSPIS. So it's like they just wanted these cats whatever time they may have had left to have a nice life as opposed to spending it in a shelter. But then fixed them.
Wow.
I don't know exactly how
you love them back to hell.
Yeah, but it's like they're all they're all doing well, thriving, and so when someone piped up and said they would like to adopt one pair, specifically the pair that is still testing very, very slightly positive for an immunodeficiency ailment, but very healthy, it was like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess this is why we're doing it. Like this was the whole point, and so we packed them up and. Met the gentleman in question at Dice Arts. He was coming up from Southern Maine, it really does sound like they're going to have a lovely life. He's got a 9-year-old daughter at home, and he's already sent us some pictures showing the kitties settling in very nicely. And so it was Like, I mean, I cried like a baby. Like,
of course, that's what you do.
I was an emotional wreck. You know, sitting, you know, there's nothing like sitting in a truck stop parking lot and crying to make you really, you know, just be like, just look around and like, am I prepared for this sort of thing? but yeah, we went and we're driving back towards home, and you know, Sheridan kind of turns to me and she's like, "Do you want to get some ice cream?" And I said, "Yes,
yes, I do.
Yes, I
please.
Do want ice cream, mm-hmm. please." And
that helped.
It did. It you know, ice cream always helps. And then we got home and hung out with the other two cats for a bit, and we had a conversation. Specifically because the rescue had reached out and said that there were potential adopters for the other two cats, and we said, you know what, we're good, we're gonna hood, and these cats live with us now. And so yes, and so Vader and Cleo are part of the Addams family for good. Sheridan's over the moon, I'm thrilled. Stella is skeptical. but she's like she enjoys the cats. She's just she's not super cool with their utter disregard for boundaries, and also their complete lack of fear of her. She tries to do she tries to be tough. She curls the lip. She'll even lunge at them a little bit, and the threats have been idle for so long that they're like, the cats are just like, we both know that you're not going to do anything,
right?
So let's just move on.
I hate seeing a downtown Hall of Fame inductee be upset about it. So I'm just saying that there is, you know, a cat that might help fill the void that the two that left. If you want to talk after we're off the air, you know.
I think two is probably our ceiling, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah, but it sounds like you wouldn't know Jeffrey was there because he's so antisocial, he'd just hide under the bed.
Yeah, he'll just go upstairs somewhere and you'll never see him.
Oh shoot. But yeah, and then last night I joined Jen Shepard, Lawrence Fingerhut, and Jason Preble. And we did a set for Bangor High's Project Graduation.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Did you behave? I mean, was it G rated?
We were allowed to, as long as we steered clear of certain very, very troublesome words, we were able to go where we wanted to go. And so yeah, we went up and did about an hour at 10 o'clock last night.
Wow.
It was fun. Like got some of the kids involved. It's, well, you know, Rich, like it's, you know, some kids are very enthusiastic to be involved. Some kids are like on the inside, they want to participate, but mm-hmm. they can't allow themselves to,
right.
to look like they care about anything. And then you have a few who are just outright like, you know, who want to make sure everyone knows how little they care about what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, so it was an interesting mix.
You think you're funny, improv boy? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was probably Jason, though.
Yes. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, we're on our way out. He just started slugging kids in the face. And it's like, okay, we got to get out of here.
Exactly.
And I don't believe he's allowed within 500 feet of the facility anymore.
It's bound to happen eventually.
Well, you know. So that's kind of a late night.
Ooh, so you had a very full weekend.
There was a lot. It was a lot.
Well, did you get a chance to watch any movies since last week?
You know, I did.
Well, good.
I got to see a couple.
All right. Well, let's hear.
Well, we got one. From one of the streamer services, and we got one in the theaters.
Nice.
We have on Hulu, the Hulu original, Flamin' Hot. The origin story of the Flamin' Hot Cheeto.
Uh-huh, okay.
At the theaters, I went to see Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Mm, boy.
Which would you like to hear about?
Oh, man. I'm curious about the Cheetos, but I want to save that, I think, for last. So let's hear about Transformers.
All right. So, okay, we're gonna get into the weeds just for a second here.
Sure,
so, yeah. So for those who are unfamiliar with the origins of Transformers... the original animated series hit our airwaves in the mid-1980s, basically created by Hasbro as a marketing tool for toys that already existed in mm-hmm. Japan. Like, they basically wanted to figure out a way to more easily sell these toys to American children. And they're like, let's make a cartoon show. And so they did that, wildly successful. And so Transformers became extremely hot toys. But the cartoon also maintained a level of popularity that wound up sort of expanding beyond the original idea. And among those expansions is something called Beast Wars. Now, Beast Wars was a little after my time. Like, I was very much into the OG Transformers, but Beast Wars didn't come along until about a decade or so later, so like mid-late 90s, sort of at the forefront of the initial push for computer animation, as you were talking about with your previous guest. But this was basically, like, Beast Wars, it's like they're Transformers, but instead of turning into cars, they turn into animals. pretty simple. But this, the whole deal with that was, it was finally more engaged storytelling in terms of, character development and that sort of thing, rather than just being an out-and-out toy commercial. I mean, still a toy commercial, yeah. But a much more clearly thought out and narratively driven one. So Beast Wars is sort of where we're basing this movie. Film directed by Stephen Caple. It's the second one in the series to not be directed by Michael Bay, which this is a good thing.
Yes.
And like, this is not a great movie, but in comparison to a lot of the ones that came before, it was pretty good. Like, it was pretty good. The basic gist is you've got your animal transformers. They're called Maximals, and they are the guardians of this like time warp shard MacGuffin thing that allows you to open portals in time and space. It doesn't really matter, except that it's the tool for the big bad, a gigantic planet eating robot entity known as a Unicron, that name might ring familiar to those of you who recall the original Transformers animated film. In that movie, Unicron, voiced by none other than Orson Welles. we're going back. Unicron's servants are coming to this planet to fight the Maximals and get the time warp MacGuffin doodad from them, including their leader, a gorilla named Optimus Primal, voiced by the great Ron Perlman. But Unicron's primary henchman, a scary robot named Scourge, voiced by Peter Dinklage. It's got a pretty good voice cast. Wow. A pretty good voice cast. They have a fight, and the Maximals wind up escaping into a time warp and heading off to parts unknown with the warp crystal that Unicron wants so he can go and continue eating planets. I know. Wow. I know. Flash forward to 1994, which is when this film is set. Let me make it clear, they go to great pains to remind you as often as they can that we are in 1994, specifically with the soundtrack, which, as someone who graduated from high school in 1994, is an absolute banger. Like, I was here for every single one of these songs. But anyway, so you've got this this young man by the name of Noah Diaz, and he's played by Anthony Ramos, living in New York City with his mom and his ill younger brother. He's trying to get a job, trying to figure out a way to take care of his brother, take care of their hospital bills, et cetera, et cetera. And then in a sort of parallel story, you've got a young woman played by Dominique Fishback, who is interning at a museum and is, some sort of like, archaeological savant. I don't know if that's a thing, but she knows more about what's going on than her boss, who is the museum curator, which, okay, but... she stumbles upon an artifact that, what is this bird? This isn't from Egypt. They say it's from Egypt, but it's not from Egypt. Like I said, I'm getting to the weeds a little bit. Suffice it to say, our man Noah, winds up falling in with the wrong crowd, gets enlisted to steal a car. Turns out the car he steals is one of the Transformers. He's an Autobot, Mirage, voiced by Pete Davidson. And so he winds up getting drawn into the whole thing because our museum intern winds up trying to analyze the statue, breaks it open, there's the crystal, shoots some lasers up into the sky, and it's like, oh, now everybody knows where the thing is. And then the fights start happening.
Wow.
Robots start fighting. First, it's, you know, the Autobots versus the unfortunately named Terrorcons led by Scourge. And then they have to go on a quest. They wind up in Peru. That's where the Maximals are. And so we re-engage with Optimus Primal, as well as Rhinox and Air Razor. Air Razor,
oh,
swear to God, Rich, Oscar winner Michelle Yeoh.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, it's hello. Just like they it's... I love these movies because it's like you're listening and you're like, wait, who is that? And then it's like, oh, right. Like, you know, you probably went to, you know, you were probably in a sound booth for 2 days and now you have a pool. So like, I get it. Like, I absolutely get it. And so, you know, there's a lot of the fighting back and forth and, you know, big feelings and big ideas about, you know, what it means to, you know, protect your own people versus the, you know, the micro good versus the macro good, blah, blah, blah. And then a lot of CGI robots doing CGI robot stuff. It's fine. It's like I had a lot more fun in this one than I've had. This is basically serving as kind of a sequel to the movie Bumblebee, which came out a few years ago, which was kind of separate, which was itself a prequel to the original Transformers series. So this movie sort of exists between Bumblebee, which happened in the late 80s, and the first Transformers movie, which took place in the mid aughts. And so the timelines get a little fuzzy, and there's a little bit of retconning going on. But again, like, you're not watching this movie because you want some sort of sophisticated dramatic, you know, arc, you know, you're not looking for, Oscar level performances. Like, you're just like, if you're going to see a movie called Transformers Rise of the Beasts, like, you know what you're getting. And for that, this is actually pretty good. Like, the director clearly has a real affection for and knowledge of the source material, which I don't think Bay ever really had. Like, I think he was much more interested in, lingering camera shots of scantily clad young ladies and then just blowing stuff up with lens flares. This is a little more sophisticated than that. I mean, not a lot more, because, again, Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Nah. But it's pretty good. I had a good time. Especially if you've got kids, not young kids, it's maybe a little scary for them, but, you know, you're talking that 10, 11, 12 years old range, target market for the toys, particularly, they're going to have a great time. Absolutely great time. Right. And, as someone who is pretty close to that, as far as my internal emotional age, I also had a good time.
All right. That's the story on Transformers Rise of the Beasts. So I caught little glimpses of the trailers. I have to confess, I thought for the longest time this Flamin' Hot thing was just a commercial for Cheetos. I didn't realize it was an actual film.
Rich, not only is it an actual film, it's good.
When it's got some good people. I mean, Tony Shalhoub, Eva Longoria directs.
Yep.
Man.
I was shocked. I was shocked by how good this movie is. Like, it didn't have to be as good as it is. It's literally the origin story of the maintenance worker at a Frito-Lay factory in California, who basically said, "I want to bring," who had an idea to bring the flavors of his heritage, the Mexican heritage, Latino, to snack foods. And wouldn't you know it, turns a very much an American dream kind of story, like, rags to riches, the whole shebang. And again, like, so it should be, this should be made clear. And if you've seen any of the coverage of this film, you probably already know, people are being very clear that this is, they played a little fast and loose with the actual story. It's You know, it's basically a print the legend kind of scenario.
Right.
Which, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, but it's based on a memoir by the guy himself, Richard Montañez,
yeah.
Which is called...
I love the title of the memoir.
Yeah. A Boy, a Burrito, and a Cookie. From Janitor to Executive. But yeah. And so it's basically we meet this guy, Richard Montañez, played by Jesse Garcia, in the late 60s, in Southern California, struggling, trying to make his way, winds up getting married young, lives the gangster life for a while, but when his wife gets pregnant, he's like, okay, I gotta clean up my act. And so he starts looking for work, struggles for a while before finally landing a job working maintenance at the local Frito-Lay factory, under the supervision of, among others, a guy, like Matt Walsh plays his direct supervisor. Wow. Just a lot of those folks like in the margins. But yeah, so he puts his head down. He works really hard. Years pass. But, you know, with the economic downturn in the 1980s, like layoffs start happening. And before long, there's fear that, you know, there's these two competing factories, basically. And only one of them looks like it's going to survive these layoffs. And so they need something big to sort of ensure, you know, cement their place. Mm. And, you know, our man Richard goes to a party and they're eating snack foods. And he sees he's looking around and he sees everybody like putting extra spice on all these snacks. And he's like, and it's that sort of epiphany kind of moment. And so he decides that he's going to come up with a new seasoning for these snacks. And so gets to work, enlists his wife, his kids, the neighborhood, everyone trying to find, basically looking to find the good kind of painful hot. And so they work through that. They find something. He tries to pitch it to his immediate superiors. No one listens to him. And so what he basically just snags the phone number of the president of PepsiCo, which owned Frito-Lay, played by Tony Shalhoub, and is like, hey, I got this idea. And the rest, as they say, is history. it's remarkably well done. And, you know, it's really funny because the comparison I kept making in my head was to Air.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's that same sort of like, it's not the story of a person necessarily, so much as it is the people who brought some sort of product, some sort of thing to life. And the performances are excellent. Jesse Garcia is wonderful in the lead. He basically carries he's the narrator as well as the star. And so he's really carrying a lot of the storytelling load. Does it beautifully. The supporting cast is exceptional. We mentioned Matt Walsh, Tony Shalhoub, so many just wonderful, talented. Dennis Haysbert plays a big part in this film. And everyone's having a good time. The story's great. It's really compelling. And you really find yourself investing in the journey that these people are going on. And it's like, look, I'll be real. Like, I'm a big fan of the Flaming Hot Cheeto. Like, I really dig it. I know it's not for everybody, but you know, it was just one of those things where I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, I'm about an hour in and I'm like, am I really watching a movie about the making right. of the Flaming Hot Cheeto and like, but engaging with it? And like Sheridan was there with me and she was, I was like, so I want to watch this movie. Like, do you want to watch it with me? And she's like, I'll sit here. But like, if I wander off, like, don't.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh no, that's fine. But she watched every minute of it. Like it was that sort of,
wow.
that sort of compelling. The comparison, I saw someone make this comparison. It's a really good one. So there's a character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Luis, played by Michael Pena, who basically does these recaps of action in the course of the movies, mostly the Ant-Man movies, where he basically will like tell a story and you'll get to see the characters sort of act out the story on screen. there were chunks of this movie that vibed very much like that, where our lead character is, you know, is relating what's happening, and we get to watch the actors sort of engage with it in that context. And so, you know, you have these board meetings that basically play out like in a very gangster kind of fashion. And then, you know, and then it's like, it's like, okay, it wasn't that gangster. And then they'll go back and we'll actually see like how it actually played out, which is, you know, your standard like button down boardroom stuff. But it was just little touches like that, which really kind of made it more than the sort of dry kind of product placement commercial that it could have been. And instead, you get a movie that was, just like I'm still baffled by how compelled I was by this movie, because, again, that can't be stressed enough. We're talking about Cheetos.
And what service is this on?
It's on Hulu.
Wow. All right, gotta check it out.
It's on Hulu, and it's like, I don't know, an hour 40. It's like it's a very tight watch. Tell you what, Eva Longoria can make a movie, man. Like this is her feature debut. But don't be surprised if you see more, because this is good work.
All right, check me out some Cheetos. Sounds good.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.